College of Basketball show on the Grueling Truth Sports Network. As always, the Grueling Truth is powered by Betting.net. Betting.net is the best bet for finding online casino or sports book that's right for you. Make sure you check them out at Betting.net. All right, our first guest of this new season for the Legends of College Basketball show. I mean, I don't think it's too bad when you go 89-1 as a college basketball player, win three national championships, then go on to coach that same school with, I think, averaged over 20 wins a season when he was the head coach there. Help me welcome to the Grueling Truth, Coach Larry Farmer. How you doing, Coach?
Good, thanks. How are you?
All right, and I'll tell you, I've interviewed a ton of guys. Never interviewed anybody that played for Coach Wooden. I'm from Indiana. Coach Wooden was from Martinsville, Indiana. So always excited to talk about that. Plus UCLA, the last really dominant college basketball dynasty. And the thing I noticed about you, your high school career, you actually thought about quitting when you were a sophomore because you weren't getting any playing time.
You know, I did. I was a late starter, bloomer, when it came to basketball. And the first time I actually played organized basketball was in junior high school in PE class. I didn't know what 3 seconds was. And, you know, whenever I ran in the lane, the referees would blow the whistle and call 3 seconds, and all the guys on my team would start yelling at me. So I just decided, since I didn't know the rules, I would never go in the key at either end of the floor. And so now I was getting yelled at both ends. But I went out for the sophomore basketball team at my high school. Denver Manual High School is one of the renowned basketball programs in the state of Colorado. Has a history of being, you know, one of the all-time great schools for basketball and turning out Division I basketball players. And as a sophomore, I was the last guy on the sophomore team. And, you know, I got in when we were either, you know, 20 points ahead or we were rarely 20 points behind. But, you know, I got to play in about half the games and scored, you know, about half the time. And so I really thought about quitting. But it was the very last game of the season my sophomore year. The varsity team was going to the state tournament. And so they brought four kids up off the junior varsity to give them some varsity experience. And they took four kids off the sophomore team and put them on the JV team as they were also going downstate. And I went from being the 12th man on the team to being like the eighth man. So I got to play the last couple of minutes of the game. I scored a career high at that time, which was 6 points, went 3 for 3 from the field. And my sophomore coach was a guy named Coach Yearling. And he pulled me aside after the game and he said, you know, if you work really hard, grow a little bit, but just stay determined, you might make the junior varsity team the next year. And that was really the encouragement I needed not to quit, because my plan at the end of the season was to quit and see if I could, you know, perhaps, you know, run track or high jump or something. So it was that little bit of encouragement that kept me going. And I wound up making the JV team the next year. And my senior year, I was, you know, an all-state first team player.
Yeah, all-state. And you guys played Manual High School for the state championship. And Manual was a team that, from looking them up, put up 100 points with no three-point line, no shot clock back in the late mid to late 60s. You guys weren't given much of a chance. You slowed the game down and actually, you know, gave them a game.
Well, you know, we as you mentioned, in the quarters and the semifinals, we broke the state record. We had 10 seniors on the varsity team at Manual. And we were, you know, fast break, press, in-your-face defense. Your missed shot was, you know, the first pass to our fast break. And we played South High School in the state championship game. And they used that strategy against us because, as you said, there was, Mike, there was no shot clock in those days. And so they came out and they just held the ball. And it frustrated us because we were a fast breaking team. And we wind up losing in the state championship. It's one.
I can't hear you, Larry. Can't hear you. Oh, we've lost Larry's connection here on his sound. Larry, I can't hear you. Your volume's off. No. Oh, we lost Larry. Some technical difficulties. What happens when you're on live? All right. You there?
Yeah, sorry.
All right. That's all right. Yeah, but you guys went on to lose, what was it, 68-59?
In a very close game, and we were behind the whole time, and the longer the game went because of the tempo of the game, the more frustrated we got as a team. And South High School, they beat us for the state championship. They were a team that they were in our league, and they finished toward the bottom of the league. But like in most states, even to this day, all teams qualify, you know, to play in the state tournament. And they had a kid on that team, Mark Williams, who was a great player. He wound up getting a scholarship, full scholarship, to the University of Kansas. Okay. But a great shooter. So I remember that game like it was yesterday.
Yeah, and how does that lead? I mean, you go from your sophomore year where you're about to quit because you're not getting any playing time to 2 years later, you're being recruited by John Wooden.
Yeah, you know, it was one of those studies in persistence and dedication. After Coach Yearling told me that if I worked really hard, I might have a chance to make the JV team the following year. And it was just that little bit of encouragement that I needed. My dad put up a makeshift basketball hoop in our backyard. Our backyard wasn't paved. And so you can imagine in Colorado, you know, when it rained, that driveway was dirt.
When it snowed, it was full of. So were you like me? I'm from Indiana in the 70s, which was huge. Basketball was huge back then. So if right. it snowed, we would just all go shovel it so we could still play. I mean, it'd be freezing out. Nobody's wearing gloves because you can't shoot with gloves on. And we'd play all day that way. It's a wonder nobody got frostbite.
And then you would bring multiple basketballs because once, you know, one of those outdoor balls got a little saturated with water, wouldn't bounce properly. So made dribbling tough.
Yeah.
But, you know, I dedicated myself and I would shoot in the mornings and I would play every afternoon, shoot in the mornings and play every afternoon. And it was just one of those things where the following year I made the junior varsity team. And then after a few games, I was starting. The varsity coach called me in one day and said, hey, we're going to move you up to the varsity, Larry. And I was not happy about that because I was just finally getting a chance to play on the JV team. Now you're going to move me up to the varsity, put me on the bench again. And that was my first real lesson in putting the team first, because he said, we're not bringing you up not to play you, but we're bringing you up because we believe you can help the varsity at Manual win. And that was a valuable lesson to me. And I moved up. I was on the second string for a couple of games, and then I wound up starting the majority of my junior year on the varsity.
All right. So do you remember your first interaction with UCLA where you knew that they were interested?
Oh, yeah. It's clear as a bell. I sent UCLA my transcript, a game film, and a letter. And I did all of this at the insistence of my guidance counselor, a lady named Mrs. Biffle at Manual High School. And she was not at all, she was not impressed by the number of schools that were recruiting me. I had a very good, I was a good student, and I was getting recruited at that time by a lot of the schools that were regional. You know, Kansas, Oklahoma, all the Colorado schools, Wyoming. I was getting recruited by those schools, but she wanted to broaden it out. So she encouraged me to put a list of schools together, about 20 schools, and we were going to send a game film, transcript, and a letter. And I didn't know 20 schools, so I went and bought a copy of Street and Smith, and it had the top 20.
Yeah, just use those.
Basketball teams on there. And, of course, you know, UCLA was one of them. And I'd seen UCLA play Houston in the Astrodome, you know, which was called the Game of the Century. And so we sent a letter to UCLA, and it was one afternoon. I was in class, and I got the call over the intercom to go down to the principal's office. Mike, usually that wasn't a good thing when you got
never.
That call.
Especially back then, you know, they might have had that big wood paddle. You're about to get your ass whooped or something.
Oh, you know, back then corporal punishment was still alive and well in high school.
I remember.
And so I go to the principal's office, Mr. Ward's office, and Mr. Ward's sitting there, and my high school coach, Coach Calloway, and they tell me that they had just gotten a call from Coach Denny Crum at UCLA and wanted to find out a little bit about my character. They liked the film that we sent them. They liked my transcript. And that they would be calling me at home that afternoon, you know, after school. And Mr. Ward and my high school coach were very protective. And they said, you know, Larry, don't get too excited. You know, they can get anybody they want. And, you know, they got great players there. You know, you go there, you might not ever play. But I heard it, but I didn't hear it. And when school ended, I sprinted home. And that afternoon, Denny Crum called. And one of the first things he said to me, he said, do you think you're good enough to play at UCLA? And without hesitation, I said, oh, yes, yes, coach. Then after I thought about it, it's like, you know, I might have gotten way over my skis with that answer, but I was so excited.
Yeah, and you get there, you're playing for the legendary John Wooden, Bill Walton's there, what, Sidney Wicks. I mean, that was a loaded basketball team. But I think a lot of people forget this. Until 1973, if you're a freshman, you're not playing on the varsity team as a freshman.
No, they had the freshman rule. And to this day, I wish for a number of reasons that they still had the freshman rule. It really gave, you know, young men, young women, an opportunity to grow up a little bit and to adjust, and, you know, not only socially, but academically, going from high school to college. And that freshman year gave you an opportunity to play, to grow. Because you knew you were going to be playing freshman ball, there wasn't the pressure on you as a freshman if you didn't make the varsity, if you weren't a starter on the varsity, you know, to get disgruntled as a freshman and then want to transfer. So it was a great transitional year for me. We played a great schedule in those days. We played other junior varsity, or excuse me, other freshman teams. And then, you know, in Southern California, you had great junior colleges. And so there was a schedule about 20 games that we got a chance to play. And then the following year, your sophomore year, that's when you had a chance to try out for the varsity.
Yeah, and I mean, really, your freshman year, it's kind of like your sophomore year. You got guys like Sidney Wicks, Curtis Rowe, Henry Bibby. I mean, that was a loaded basketball team. Of course, all the UCLA teams were loaded back then. And I mean, those were deep. And I'm sure that you learn from guys who, I think Wicks was, what, a junior when you got there and a senior when you were eligible to play. Guys like that had to be invaluable just at practice to be playing on the same court as those guys.
Well, you know, Sidney was the college player of the year. You know, he shared that honor depending on, you know, which poll you looked at with another great named Austin Carr. But every day in practice, you had Steve Patterson playing center, Curtis Rowe, his first round draft choice with the Detroit Pistons, and then, of course, Sidney Wicks, who would be the college player of the year, and then the next year, the NBA rookie of the year. So, you know, I played behind those guys, but I practiced against them every single day. And, you know, it was frustrating at first because they were so much bigger and stronger and better. But you get about mid-season, and the way Coach Wooden, of course, conducted his practice, and you know, it was game-like, you find yourself, even though, you know, I'm subbing in, I'm the next forward off the bench, and Coach Wooden only played eight players until the game was won or lost. And so there were times I played a lot. There were times I didn't play a lot. But I practiced every day against Sidney and Curtis. And I didn't realize how much better I had gotten until the following year, you know, when Bill Walton comes up, Sidney Wicks, Curtis Rose, Steve Patterson, they all graduate and go to the NBA. And that following year, my junior year, when I got an opportunity to start and play, you know, you're playing against really good college players, you know, the opposition. But it was nowhere close to what I was getting every day in practice with Sidney and Curtis. And it really made me a better player.
Yeah, and then you look at when you get in the starting lineup, I think it was, what, the 71-72 season, you had yourself, Keith Wilkes, Bill Walton, Henry Bibby, Greg Lee. And I got to ask this. I look at these scores, and we already talked about no shot clock, no three-point line. There was no shot clock, no three-point line. But you look at the start of the 71-72 season, you put 105 on the Citadel, 106 on Iowa, 110 on Iowa State, 117 on Texas A&M. You beat Notre Dame 114-56, TCU 119, Texas 115. You guys' first seven games, you averaged about 110 points a game.
Yeah, we that year, you know, we went 30-0. And 12 games, I believe. We had 12 games, so over a third of our games, we scored over 100 points. The real statistic with that team, 50 years later, which is still a record, is our average win margin was 30.3 points per game. We beat every team we played by the average win margin of over 30 points per game. And you look at some of the Kareem teams that he played on. Of course, they were dominant. Some of the teams in the 60s with Walt Hazard and Gale Goodrich. You look at the great Indiana teams, you know, with Scott May, Kent Benson, Quinn Buckner. None of those teams got over the 30-point margin. I think one of the UCLA teams averaged 25 points, their win margin. But to go undefeated and to dominate that way, to score the 100 points that you talked about, it was amazing. And Coach Wooden, because he kept us in the mindset of we have to become the best that we could be. We weren't looking ahead. We rarely talked about the opposition. He never mentioned the word winning. He never talked about winning. It was always about getting a little bit better. It was always about being the best you could be. So even though we were ranked number one at the beginning of the year, there was never that moment where we thought we had arrived. You know, we didn't think we had arrived until the season was over. And, you know, and that didn't last very long, because at UCLA, once you won that year, then it's, okay, what are you going to do for us next year? But it was an incredible ride, and we didn't realize how good we were till many years later.
Well, and that's great coaching, because a lot of teams, you know, they get complacent, they get happy, they're beating everybody by 30 points, and then somebody jumps up and beats them. And the thing about you is 89-1 is great, but those last 2 years, you were like 60-0. I mean, so basically they should have started you your sophomore year too. Right? maybe y'all don't lose to Notre Dame then. So, I mean, I'm just saying, you never know.
Oh, that, when I was a sophomore, you know, you want to play and you're competitive. And it was made very clear to me, not through anything that Coach Wood needed to say, but every day in practice, Sidney Wicks and Curtis Rowe, they let me know that I had to wait my turn. And, you know, you learn all of these little lessons because it was setting and waiting my turn, but getting to play against them every day in practice. And I played in a lot of the games. I mean, it wasn't like I was sitting on the bench and never got in. I played in a lot of the games and played a key role in several of the really important games. But it was just that little bit of humility and training and sacrifice that everybody has to go through in life that really prepared me for what was going to come next. You know, we won 75 games in a row before I graduated, and that streak went to 88. And when you think about it, you get to 40 in a row. How does the coach keep a team focused? How does, you know, you're beating everybody by wide margins? Well, that was one of the geniuses, again, of Coach Wooden, because he was so even-keeled. Avoid the highs, avoid the lows. It's the next game that's important. It's what we do that's going to determine the outcome of the game. It's what we do in practice. You know, failure to prepare is preparing to fail. I can't tell you how many times I heard that. Be quick, but don't hurry. All of those things in practice became our culture. And so when you're only thinking about getting better, you're not worried about your next opponent, it allows you to kind of stay in that mental bubble that you need to. So you shed out a lot of the outside noise and you really just focus on, you know, what you have to do. And I knew if I did my job, we would have a great chance to win. And then you play with great players and they do their job. Well, you know, then you win a lot.
Yeah, and you guys won a lot. And I think the other thing people don't really realize about college basketball back then is like your sophomore year. USC might have been the second best team in the country. I think they went 24-2 and there were only two losses for you guys. But back then, only the conference tournament went to the end, or the conference champion went to the NCAA tournament.
Yeah, only the conference champion. And then they had a weird way of picking all of the other teams to round out, you know, the field. And then there was almost like a play-in game. It was really kind of a complicated way of forming, you know, what would then be, you know, the tournament. And, you know, we never had to worry about any of the mathematics because, you know, we always won our league. But they had a great team at USC. Paul Westphal, you know, the Hall of Famer, yeah. Dennis Layton. And they lost two games, and they were very good games, very competitive games. And because they finished second, the two losses were to us, the number one team in the country. They did not go to the NCAA tournament, you know, which you think about it now, it's tragic. They had been a two seed at minimum, you know, out of the same league. And back then they didn't even get a chance to go.
Yeah, and that Final Four that you were a starter in, you guys beat Florida State. Florida State was a really good basketball team. It was one of the few close games you really had that year. I think the star on that team was Ron King, wasn't it?
Yes. Yeah. And the thing that they did, you know, Coach Wooden, after made baskets, we would 2-2-1 press. And we largely did that because, again, there was no shot clock. And a lot of teams that had success against UCLA would run a delay game, you know.
Yeah, the old Dean Smith four quarters or four corners. Yeah.
Or just an all-out stall. And, you know, USC, one of Kareem's two losses, you know, they lost to Houston in the Astrodome, and they lost to USC in Pauley Pavilion. And that loss to USC was because of all-out and all-out stall. So Coach Wooden decided that we would always be a pressing team. After we scored, we would press to kind of create tempo, speed up play. And most of the time, if you attacked our press, the 2-2-1, the shot that you give up when the press is initially broken are the shots out of the corners. You know, Bill is the lone defender back there, and he's protecting the basket, but you leave the corners wide open. And Florida State, instead of breaking the press and then setting up their offense, which also allowed us to set up our defense, they took the chance. They played risky basketball, and they would kick it to the corner, you know, after they broke the press, and they would take that shot. And King was making those shots. So it was the first time that year that after several made baskets, Coach decided, you know, I'm not going to give them these open shots after they break the press out of the corners. We took the press off and just started to, after we score, we go back to our half-court defense. And that's when we spurred it and then got ahead of them. But they were the first team all year that really did a good job of attacking the press, taking the shot. Because if you miss it, Walton's getting the rebound, making that outlet, and we're off to the races again. But they made those shots, and it forced us to come out of the press until we kind of got the ship righted, and then we spurted on them and then wound up winning that game.
All right, so I watched college basketball today, and every once in a while it'll be a Pac-12 game that Bill Walton's doing. Was he that nuts back then, too?
You know, no. Bill is a great teammate. I saw Bill a couple of weeks ago. We had the 50th reunion of our 1972 team, the team we're currently talking about. It's been 50 years since that team won the national championship. And Bill's a great teammate. He's a great guy. He's extraordinarily intelligent. And, you know, years ago, Bill found that if he was a little bit different when he did a broadcast, you know, you could kind of cookie cutter a lot of the really good analysts because they know the game, they know players, you know, they add to the viewing audience. It educates the viewing audience, so they get an idea of what they're seeing. But some years ago, Bill realized that if he was a little bit quirky, said some things a little bit off the cuff, maybe take things in a different direction. You know, it's like anything else. You know, there's an audience that really enjoys the things that Bill says, especially a lot of the stuff that he says that doesn't have anything to do with basketball.
Yeah.
And he's got a huge following of people that just love him. But to your question, a great teammate, extraordinarily bright. He was so much fun to play with. And all these many years later, he's like a brother to me.
Yeah, and one of the greatest centers that ever lived. And a lot of people don't realize that because after that 77 championship with the Trailblazers, there were so many injuries there. But even 9 years after that or 10 years after that, when he played with the Celtics, when he did stay healthy, he was a huge contributor in 1986 to their championship.
As fundamentally sound a player as you'll ever see. And I've told people this for many years. You know, he was 6'11" and quick and agile, and you know, he's a great shot blocker, and you know, he went 21-for-22, you know, in a championship game, which is still an NCAA record. Walton would have been a very good basketball player if he were 6'6".
Yeah.
Because he was just that smart and talented and fundamentally sound. So when you get a guy like that and you stretch him out to 6'11", you know, you've got one of the top 50 greatest players of all time, you know, which he was voted. And it's a shame that his body didn't hold up because I think, you know, as you mentioned, people that watched him play acknowledge his greatness, but oftentimes he was playing with a broken body, you know, knees, back, ankles. He had a lot of injuries, but despite that, you know, he was still one of the greatest centers to ever play the game.
Yeah, and then you go to that 1972-73 season, your senior year. I mean, it's scary when you look at the scores here, Larry. I mean, there was exactly, you guys played in the regular season four games that were decided by less than 10 points.
Yeah, and again, we're coming off an undefeated season. One of the cool things back in those days about playing at UCLA is we never played in a stadium arena that wasn't packed. Every place that we played was packed on the road, and those were fun games because you would go in and the crowds would just be raucous and crazy. Well, after you have a year where you go undefeated and you win the national championship and your average win margin is 30.3 points per game, teams are less, coaches are smart, and they start to slow the pace of the game down. They manage those possessions a lot longer. And so, although we went undefeated, a lot more of the games, I think we only scored over 100 points, maybe once or twice that entire season, because teams really tried to manage the pace at which we played. And so our fans called it the Bruin Blitz, where we would score, press, and if we could get you to miss quickly or turn the ball over, we would score 6, 8 points in a row and kind of take what might be a close game and kind of stretch it out. And once we could get the other team, the opposition, to kind of play at a normal pace, then it allowed us to play the way we did. But, people adjusted to us. And my senior year, even though our average win margin was 20 points, it was 20 point something, the games were a lot more competitive. They were a lot closer because of the opposition making adjustments.
Yeah, and I am an Indiana fan, so I got to bring up 1973, the semifinal game. I was only 4 years old, so I don't remember it, but all these Indiana fans were always telling me, man, Steve Downing didn't touch anybody. It shouldn't have been his fifth foul. But you guys had a 40-22 halftime lead against really Bobby Knight's first great IU team. I think Quinn Buckner was a freshman on that team.
Yes,
But
he was.
Downing and Walton, I've never seen the game because I don't know that the entire game film exists at least. But it sounds like Downing and Walton had an absolutely epic battle in that semifinal, and Indiana actually got the lead down to two with 5 minutes left. And Downing and Walton both had four fouls on them. Downing got the fifth foul, and then you guys pulled away to beat Indiana 70-59. What do you remember about that game?
I remember us getting a lead, and rarely would you ever lose focus playing for Coach Wooden. Rarely. And we got off to a great start. We had a big lead, and we took our foot off the gas. And had it not been for Tommy Curtis, who was an on and off starter, Tommy Curtis and Greg Lee shared time at the point guard position. Greg Lee started, Tommy backed him up. That year, Tommy started off the season as a starter with Greg backing him up. But ultimately, they both played about the same amount of time. It was like playing with two quarterbacks. Tommy was a little bit faster, so our breaks were different. Greg was, tremendous in the half court. So we had two different quarterbacks. But we definitely took our foot off the gas and let Indiana get right back in the game. And so, now it's the semifinals. It's getting to the championship game is up for grabs. And I don't remember the battle between Walton and Downing. I really don't remember that. But I remember Tommy Curtis coming in and hitting shot after shot after shot. He had a great second half. And it was his shooting late in the game that allowed us then to get back and get a comfortable lead. And we wound up, winning that game and then going on to the national championship game. But yeah, Tommy Curtis saved us in that semifinal game.
Yeah, and you guys beat Memphis fairly easily. I would say the national championship game was probably you guys against Indiana when it came down to it. Memphis had a good team, but yeah, Downing actually scored 26 points on Walton on 12 of 20 shooting. And Walton had 14. But yeah,
That.
Tommy Curtis off the bench, 22 points, 9 of 15 shooting. Seems like he's the reason that you destroyed all Hoosiers' dreams. Because you got to remember, I mean, from 1953 when they last won it with Branch McCracken, it'd been 20 years since Indiana had been to the Final Four. And, that was a big deal. Basketball was everything in Indiana. So I always hear Indiana fans talking about that. Now, that national championship game, playing in all those winning games, What was it like when you guys finally beat Memphis and you knew this is the last time I'm going to put this uniform on?
You know, that's a great question. You know, I was a senior, I was the team captain, and you know, I've often told players, I coached basketball for 44 years, and if I said it once, I said it a million times to those young kids, you don't know how fast all of this goes by. And once playing college basketball is one of the greatest times you'll ever have in your life. You know, you get married, you have a family. These are all great moments. But you think about being a college student where you don't have the responsibilities of paying bills and managing your family. This is really the last time you have to be, even though you're a young man, to be a kid. And when I played that last game and that four-year UCLA career was over, there was a feeling of relief and satisfaction because I was about to win my third national championship in a row. I had proved to myself over those years that I was good enough. I answered Denny Crum's question when I was a senior in high school. Was I good enough to play at UCLA? And, you know, you kind of walk off the court knowing, hey, I started for 2 years. We never lost a game when I was a starter. I've got three championship rings. I kind of think I checked that box. And then I played for the greatest coach to ever coach a sport. And when he took me out of the game, I hugged him and I thanked him for taking a chance on a young kid out of Denver. And he smiled and gave me a big hug back. And it was one of the moments in sports that I'll never forget. You know, the security that they have around the teams at these Final Fours. My mom and dad had come to the championship game and they had never seen me play live in college. I grew up in Denver and, you know, we played obviously in California, and my folks couldn't afford to jet back and forth. So yeah. The first time they saw me play live was, you know, in the semifinals against Indiana and then the national championship game. And somehow after that game ended, after I hugged Coach Wooden, shook all the assistant coaches' hands, walked down and gave five to all the guys, you know, that were on the bench, I went to get some water. And I look out of the corner of my eye, and coming down through the stands, there's a commotion. And my mother has talked to an usher and said, that's my son down there, and I want to go down there and give him a hug. And all these UCLA fans were pointing, yeah, that's her son. And they let her come down behind the bench. And I've got this classic picture of me walking around the bench and giving my mom a hug. How she talked her way into that, I don't know.
Doesn't get any better than that.
Oh, it doesn't. It really
does. All right, guys, right now, head over now and see for yourself. Betting.net makes it easy to find all the legal online casinos or sportsbooks in your state. Make sure you check them out. Check the link in the description for Caesars Sportsbook, which is our recommended sportsbook, and the link on YouTube. We'll go ahead and I think we could probably talk for hours here, Larry, but I will bring this up. What drove you to be an assistant coach? Because I know after Coach Wooden left, Gene Bartow, who was a really good basketball coach too, who built a program at UAB that made it to Elite Eights and Sweet 16s, became the head coach there. What made you want to be a head coach? And was it that you wanted to kind of bring into effect what you learned from Coach Wooden?
My dream at that time was to, like, you know, just about everybody else that played at UCLA in those days, was to have an opportunity to play professional basketball. Wanted to play in the NBA. And I was drafted by the Cleveland Cavaliers and the Denver Rockets. We had an ABA and an NBA at that time. And I was a lower draft pick with the Cavaliers, but they gave me a better contract. It was a make the team contract, but had I made the team, I would have made a little bit more money. Trust me, salaries back in the 70s are not like they are now. And I made it through rookie camp, veteran camp, and exhibition season. And then I got cut from the Cavaliers on that very last day before they started, you know, the regular season. And Coach Wooden had kept the graduate assistant coaching position open for me in the event that I didn't make it. I didn't make the Cavaliers. And so it was kind of a bittersweet thing. I got cut and went back to UCLA. Practice had already started, but I was able to enroll in class and then actually start to get some coaching experience. So I've gone from being a starter on the team with teammates Bill Walton and Jamal Wilkes, and now I come back, I'm no longer on the team, and UCLA might have had the best talent that they've ever had on one team, because they had Marcus Johnson, Richard Washington, Dave Myers, Jamal Wilkes, Bill playing the center, Ralph Drollinger. I mean, these guys were all NBA guys, a couple of college players of the year. And so that was a difficult time for me, because now I was no longer a player a year removed, but I was coaching. And I thought at some point in time that I would be, I would get a chance to play professional basketball, you know, maybe play 8, 9, 10 years, however long. And then once I finished playing, I would get a teaching credential and maybe get a high school coaching job. Because I always thought I'd wind up, you know, doing something involving basketball anyway. It just happened a lot quicker. So after that year that I spent as the graduate assistant, the following year, I went and played professional basketball in Europe. And that was the year that Coach Wooden won the championship and retired. They hired Gene Bartow, who we, you know, we played, as you mentioned, at Memphis State. And Coach Bartow, when he got the job at UCLA, he wanted to hire one of Coach Wooden's former players who had coaching experience. And so the bittersweet part of that was I had gotten cut by the Cavaliers, but it gave me a year of coaching experience, only 1 year. And so when Coach Bartow got hired, he called me. I was playing basketball, professional basketball in Germany. I came back and interviewed, got the job, went back to Germany, finished the season. And so just 2 years removed from having played at UCLA, I was all of a sudden a full-time assistant.
Yeah, and then 1976 team, UCLA was still loaded. And from what I remember there, you guys lost to Indiana in the Final Four, 65-51, but you did beat a Rutgers team who had entered that. See, people forget there was two undefeated teams in that Final Four, and you guys lost to Indiana, but I think you handled Rutgers fairly easily in the third place game, which they used to have back then. So yeah. I think it's safe to say that in 1976 with Gene Bartow, you guys were at worst the second best team in the country. But how hard of a job was it to replace John Wooden? Because we saw Gene Bartow, we saw Larry Brown, we saw yourself all have success there. But when you're following a guy who loses one game every 3 years, it seems like, that's tough to follow.
It really is. Coach Bartow was handpicked by the athletic director, J.D. Morgan. And J.D. Morgan, of course, you know, was responsible for building Pauley Pavilion. And he made Coach Wooden's job so much easier for him. Coach Bartow, in 2 years, went 52-9. 52-9. And two of those nine losses were to that Indiana team that you talked about. We lost to them in the semifinals.
And in the first game of the year, too.
Yeah, the first game of the season. And that was billed as, you know, because Indiana had missed out on an opportunity the year before to play for the national championship. They lost, I think it was to Kentucky. A lot of fans all throughout the nation were saying, you know, that this game was going to be really what should have been the national championship game the year before. The difference was, you know, Coach Wooden had retired. So we as UCLA fans felt that Indiana had a lot more, they had a lot more reason to make this a huge game other than just the opening game of the season. But like I said, Coach Bartow went 52-9. In most places, they will build a statue in your honor if you could do that in 2 years. But he was following Coach Wooden, and it was really for him, it was, or anybody that would have followed him, it would have been a no-win situation because he was constantly getting compared to Coach Wood.
Yeah, and Gene Bartow was a great basketball coach. I mean, he went to UAB in 1978, had him in the NIT by 1980, which that was still, I think, when it was like 32 teams in the NCAA tournament, so it was still a big deal to get to the NIT. And then seven straight tournament appearances. I think they went to the Sweet 16 in 81. They went to the Elite Eight in 82. I remember that because I think they upset Indiana in the second round. But we're not going to talk about that. But Gene Bartow was a great coach. And then Larry Brown comes around. And I would think Larry Brown and John Wooden are about as different as you can get.
Well, Gary Cunningham was in between.
Oh, yeah, I forgot about Gary. Because he wasn't he Coach Wooden's main assistant when you were there?
Yes, he was there for 10 years with when I first got to UCLA as a player. It was Gary Cunningham and Denny Crum. And Gary Cunningham to this day has the highest winning percentage of UCLA basketball coach. Gary, like Gene Bartow, only stayed for 2 years. And again, with, he was a native son. He played at UCLA. He was an assistant. He played for Coach Wooden. He was an assistant for 10 years. He got out of basketball for a couple of years, and then he was hired after Coach Bartow. Very similar to Coach Wooden, a great game planner, a practice teacher, much in the same mold as Coach Wooden. And then after 2 years, Coach Cunningham resigned, becoming athletic director, and that's when Coach Brown came. And Coach Brown, I don't know if I mentioned this to you, I've spent the last 2 years writing a book about the very things that we're talking about how I got to UCLA, and as a high school senior, being recruited to UCLA, making my recruiting visit there as an 18-year-old kid, sitting in Coach Wooden's office, being offered jelly beans. I was so nervous. I'm talking to Coach Wooden. I'm on my recruiting visit. And then 12 years later, that is my office. 12 years after I made that recruiting visit, I was the head coach at UCLA. But that's what my book's about. And it's called The Role of a Lifetime. But when Coach Brown came, he was so totally different, because Coach Brown was really cool. That's how I describe him. He had that NBA background. He was more of an NBA coach. He was more of a pure basketball guy. The other guys had been college guys, and he brought a different energy to the UCLA basketball program, which is, I think, exactly what it needed because of the turnover that we had in coaches.
Yeah, that was Rocket Rod Foster as a freshman, Kiki Vandeweghe. They made it to the championship game against Daryl Griffith in Louisville, lost 59-54. And then you become the head coach, and your success, I mean, you had two seasons, well over 20 wins. The third season, I think, was like 17-11, but your winning percentage wasn't too bad either. And I think the way I remember was that you stepped down. Was that because of the pressure, or was that because of something else?
It was really the pressure. I was there for 3 years. And again, after Coach Wooden retired, Coach Bartow was there for 2 years, Gary Cunningham for 2 years, Larry Brown for 2 years. Coach Brown left after 2 years to go back to the NBA. So he had a different reason for leaving. But he did voice many of the same concerns that Gary Cunningham did, and also Gene Bartow. And I really think when I became the head coach at UCLA at age 30, I think that there had been enough distance kind of put between what Coach Wooden did and when I got there, that maybe some of the expectations might not have been quite as unrealistic. But when I got named the head coach, the first thing that came out, played for Coach Wooden, 89-1. Here we go again. Here go the glory days. And, I was fine with that because I was on the teams that kind of created this Frankenstein monster that everybody else had kind of had to deal with. And so, I was there for 3 years. I was given a contract extension for 3 years. And then I decided that, I couldn't win the way I knew I wanted to win and the way UCLA expected me to win. And so with 3 years remaining, I'd just been given a contract extension. I decided to walk away.
All right. Now, I know you stay on here way longer than what I told you this would be, but one last question. What's it like coaching the Kuwait national team?
And that's another great question. I have been around some of the greatest people and the greatest coaches in my career that you can imagine. I got to spend a year with Don Nelson, 2 years with Larry Brown, Gary Cunningham. I played for Coach Wooden. I have been around people that just love the game. And I like to think of myself as somebody that is like that too. And when you love the game, you'll coach it anywhere. You'll coach it at any level. And I had an opportunity to coach international basketball. And that international experience came with the Kuwait national team, their Olympic team, after the Gulf War. And the country of Kuwait, they were trying to get the people off the streets and back in a proper mindset because their country had just been invaded. And of course, the United States had just gotten the Iraqis out of there. So the Kuwait government hired a soccer coach from Brazil, which you might expect, and a basketball coach from America. And I went over there to coach their national team for one season, and one season turned into five seasons.
So I guess you enjoyed yourself there.
You know, it was I would sign a one-year contract, and even though I was coaching their national team, I was still able to come back to the United States during our basketball season. And I worked for ESPN, and then I did some work for CBS doing broadcasting. But the international season was spring, summer, and fall. So yeah. I was able to do both. And every year I would sign a one-year contract and say, you know, it pays well, and I'm loving what I'm doing. And we'd win just enough for the Kuwaitis to say, hey, we want to bring you back. And I would go back. That lasted for 5 years.
All right, Coach. I know I've kept you about 15 minutes longer than what I promised you, but it was great having you on the show. It's awesome to hear the stories about, you know, Coach Wooden, Coach Walton, your life from basically high school basketball to less than 15 years later. You're the head coach at UCLA. You've had an incredible life so far, and I would love to have you on again sometime.
I'd love to do it. You know, you get me talking about Coach Wooden and UCLA, Bill Walton. You know, that 15 minutes, it was probably me that kept you on too long because I kept talking and telling too many stories.
No, I've sat here with guys for a couple hours before, so especially guys that I never thought would be a couple hours. But yeah, and we do a show, Survive in Advance, which is a couple times a week. I do it with Steve Risley, who played on the 81 national championship team from Indiana. And I know he's already said he wants you to come on the show so you guys can talk a little 70s and 80s college basketball. And I mean, how could it get better? We got somebody to play for Coach Knight, somebody to play for Coach Wood. So
I'd love to do that. That would be fun.
All right. We are going to go ahead and we are going to wrap the show up. I want to remind everybody to make sure you check out Caesars Sportsbook. Also, betting.net. Betting.net finds the best promotions, offers, and bonus codes so you don't have to. Head over to their website now to take advantage of things like free bets and matching deposits. All right, guys, you can follow us at Grueling Truth. You can hear our shows on iHeartRadio, Google Podcasts, Spotify, over 300 different outlets. But for now, we're going to go ahead and wrap it up. For Coach Larry Farmer, I'm Mike Goodpaster. You've been watching and listening to The Grueling Truth.